welcome to Primetime.
Hello, and welcome to Prime Cuts, where we talk backbench business and answer the questions you didn't know you had about modern British politics. I'm John.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Kes. And today we are doing something that every politics textbook has, how laws are made. But we're obviously going to do this in a much more fun and interesting way because we are hilarious and delightful. And as the definitive ranking Prime Minister's podcast, it's our responsibility, I feel.
Exactly. In the UK. Definitively in the UK.
No, globally. And also we are obviously excellent, seasoned broadcasters. So get ready for the most exciting bit of parliamentary procedure you've ever heard in your life.
I actually don't know how laws are made, so I will actually learn things.
You get ready, because you're going to know really how laws are made at the end of this episode.
I know that they're written down at some point.
John's right. Spoilers. They absolutely are.
Oh, I know about the common something law that we talked about when it was like a murder is just a...
Yeah.
Just generically bad.
Excellent. Common law. This is something I suppose I could talk about. Yeah, this is not that.
So this is the other side of it. The common law is the things where we go, look, we don't need to write down that murdering people is bad. We all agree. And that's the common law. That's things like, yeah, murder, abuse of public office. That sort of thing is covered by common law. And that's been essentially derived from precedent since Henry II?
Yeah, since the dawn of Henry II. Yeah, something like that.
Okay, hang on. So if I want to commit a crime, all I have to do is think of something so bizarre that it hasn't been done before, and then I could theoretically get away with it.
You are describing the actions of many a Silicon Valley executive.
Yes,
because
that's true.
One of the principles of the British common law system is that everything is permitted until it is not.
Exactly. But yeah, so there basically are two sides of the law. You have the common law, which is stuff that comes from judges, stuff that's been written down in legal cases, legal precedents over the centuries, both hundreds of years ago and indeed yesterday. But this is the other side of the law, which is statute law. So these are acts of parliament, stuff that comes out of parliament that's all written down in one big document.
So when people say, that should be illegal, what they mean is, it's not now illegal, so why don't we go and get some people to go, that's illegal?
And put it in a big document that says this is a new illegal thing. Exactly. So as we talked in our episode about what a prime minister does, we have a parliamentary system. So we made a distinction between parliament, who makes the laws, and the government that runs the country. But, as we also said, running the country also involves wanting to change the law, because every aspect of the state, from the health and education systems to taxation, pensions, all of this sort of stuff, is in the law. So if you want to change how the pensions work, as the government might want to do, you've got to change the law, so you've got to get Parliament to do it. Therefore, the majority of parliamentary time is devoted to debating bills, proposed new laws, that are presented by the government to Parliament, by the members of the government, all of whom must be in Parliament.
And they're all called Bill.
They're all called Bill. Well, they're all called Bills.
So a bill is a sort of proposed new law, you know, My First Law by Fisher Price.
Exactly that. So while it's going through Parliament, it's called a bill. Getting a law passed is a very long and complex process, but one which aims to subject bills to many different kinds of scrutiny from very different points of view and different people. So let's follow a totally random bill. We'll call it the Podcaster's Bill through Parliament. This bill would give the Prime Team a very large annual income paid for directly by the King.
Nice. He's hired us personally.
He's hired us personally, if this bill gets through Parliament.
So what attributes does this bill have at the moment?
So the bill is a very short bill. It doesn't have very many clauses. It's quite short in length. Bills can be one little sentence to literally hundreds of pages, depending on what the bill is about. But this one's quite short, but it sets up an annual fund that the King must pay into every year that goes straight to us.
Nice. How much is it? Is it good?
It is roughly £82 billion a year.
Okay, yeah.
So small for like, you know.
Just, you know, sort of reasonable.
Yeah, groceries and stuff.
Yeah,
on our Patreon, they would be able to suggest new episodes for that.
The King can suggest new episodes if he gives us £82 billion a year.
Only once a year, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Not the annual episode.
House of Commons. Bills can start in either house. We have two houses of parliament. There's not a set order, but it's got to go through both. But major and potentially controversial bills normally start in the Commons.
That makes sense.
Exactly. And especially this controversial bill, giving us £82 billion a year, that's probably going to be quite controversial.
Yeah,
so. I know, yeah, they should have started with more.
So the reason that things like this often start in the House of Commons is because there are the different purposes of the two houses. So the House of Commons is democratic. It's also very combative. It's lots of parliamentary politics, lots of party politics. Whereas the Lords consider themselves to be much more looking at amending things, changing things, poking holes, rather than ripping things up entirely. So for big controversial things, it makes more sense to put it in the House of Commons and get that sort of democratic stamp on it. And then it can go for the Lords for some tweaks.
Mm.
That also feels like a little bit of a power play, in the sense that if you pass something through the Commons first, you're going, well, look, the democratically elected representatives of the people have agreed to this. So what do you, the people who just sit on your bums and, I don't know, look at the things we've written all day, think about it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And so you often see when the Lords look like they're going to change things significantly, one of the arguments that comes back is, this has passed the House of Commons already. Back off. Don't go too far. So, starting in the House of Commons, there are lots and lots of different stages that it goes through. And many of them are called readings. And the reason that they're called readings goes to back in the days before the printing press, because there were many hundreds of MPs, but you'd have to get a bill written out by a scribe hundreds of times for everyone to get their own copy.
So they did like a little fireside chat, like someone would read it out.
That's
like
exactly
a fun
it.
Voice.
Yeah, exactly. They'd all gather in the chamber, and then one of the clerks, one of the officials, is still called the reading clerk, because it was their job just to stand up and just read the whole thing.
But also, just thinking about it, if they had gone down the route of trying to write down the bill, just imagine how difficult that would have been, when not only do you need, I don't know, 1,000 copies of it for all the MPs and Lords, but every time there's an amendment.
Oh, God.
Every one of those copies needs to be found and changed or destroyed and replaced. I mean, oh, how messy.
Just a little post-it note on the front.
Yeah, exactly. So the first stage is called the first reading, which used to be when the bill was read for the first time. No debates, no votes, just a, we'll listen to it and have a think about it. Obviously, bills aren't read out in full anymore, and so it's a bit odd that the first reading still exists, but they don't read out the bill, so all it is someone stands up, says the name of the bill, and then that's it.
So it's a bit of a sort of almost like a political radar. It's like a ping. It's going,
yeah.
Hey, you know, this podcasting bill, it's out there.
Okay? Here it is. Exactly. That's it. So someone says, one of the clerks says, podcaster's bill. And then the speaker says, second reading, what day? And then one of the government whips says, tomorrow, which doesn't mean tomorrow. It just means not today. In classic parliamentary stuff. Does tomorrow mean tomorrow? Yes, but no. Or in this case, perhaps no. Or perhaps
but sometimes
in this,
yes.
Well, or in this case, no, but possibly yes, but almost certainly not. So it's all very, very funny, but it lasts about 7 seconds, and the bill then gets printed. That's it.
So at this point, the bill's been written.
Yep.
Probably by, what, like an MP or a clerk or somebody?
There's a whole department of lawyers that can draft bills for you.
Okay. And it's been gotten onto the parliamentary radar somehow.
There has been a first reading, so it has been printed and published, and it is now on the parliamentary internet, and everyone's aware that it exists.
But also, at this point, no one's had the capacity to say no yet.
No, it has not been debated for a minute. Someone's just given the title of the bill, and it now exists, and people can read it. The next stage is called second reading. This is the first proper, actual debate that happens on the bill. It's designed to be a big overview debate, so you don't really get into the nooks and the crannies, the little details. It's more just, is this a general sort of thing that we want to do? It's a large debate. It takes place for about 2/3 of a day. And at the end of it, there's an actual vote. People vote yes or no. And if you vote no, the bill is killed.
Is there always a vote?
There is always a vote. There's not always a division. It can be passed without division, but there's always a vote.
So the speaker will always ask for opinions and then go, we need a vote, we don't, or we need a division, we don't need a division.
Yes.
Then make a decision.
But fundamentally, they need to say yes for the bill to proceed. So, bills do sometimes get defeated at second reading. People can vote them down, but this is very, very rare. The last time a bill was defeated at second reading in the Commons was in 1986. So it's pretty rare. Normally, bills are allowed to proceed, even if there's a lot of rebellion brewing.
What was it?
It was the Shops Bill, which I think aimed to change Sunday trading laws.
Oh, because that's still a thing in the UK. Is that a thing? I know it's a thing in Austria. I don't know about, like, the States or anything, but...
I don't know, but yeah, we have... Shops can only be open for a certain number of hours.
I
and I think
six,
it was even more restrictive.
Is it 6 or 5?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It depends on the square footage of the shop.
Right, actually, yeah. Yeah, so these are very broad debates. Bills are almost always allowed through at second reading. Even if people often make speeches saying, I hate this bill, I'm going to rebel, I'm going to try to amend it, I'm going to try to muck it up, people normally allow it to go through at second reading and cause trouble later. It's a sort of opening salvo as people start to get a sense of what the House is feeling.
And is that partly because people want to have the opportunity to make sure that they've sort of fomented some other rebellion? Or is it because it's just sort of not done?
A bit of both. I think often, especially if you're on the government side, it's quite big to vote down a bill. So you'd rather amend it and change it in ways that you want or in ways that just totally wreck the bill. But either way, it's a bit easier to do it that way or a bit more subtle.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Because it's not like, apart from some very particular cases where the government doesn't really have a majority, it's usually the case that you've got a stronger party, the government, saying this is what our bill is, and a weaker party, the opposition, and by party I just mean everyone really,
yeah,
but the opposition saying, oh, that's interesting, what are we going to do with that? And there will be things like opposition bills and other bills that weren't necessarily introduced by the government, but everything is in the context of the government's opinion is the one that matters here, and if you're going to stop what the government wants, that's going to require some serious teamwork.
Yes, and some serious rebellions, which is why, again, most things get through on second reading, because most bills are government bills, and the government has a majority, so normally these get voted through. Well, the question is that the podcasted bill be read a second time. As many as that opinion. Say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Be quiet, Podcat. No. Okay, brilliant.
Oh, no, Podcat is for it because he would benefit from this arrangement.
He would benefit from £86 billion worth of treats.
Yes, but Podcat is also a cat and therefore quite contrary.
Oh, that's true. Well, it's passed anyway. So the next stage is committee. This is where things start to get a little bit more interesting. So normally a cross-party committee is set up to look at the bill, about 15 members or so. And so the bill gets sent to them, and this is where you get slightly more scrutiny, not quite line by line, but you look into more of it in slightly more detail.
And this is still in the Commons?
We're still in the Commons.
So the Lords haven't yet even heard about this bill?
No. They might have heard of it if they've, you know, looked on the internet, but they haven't officially been told that it exists.
They don't know how to use the internet. They're all in their 80s or whatever.
Some of them might not. So there's not normally time to look at every line of the bill in detail, because a real theme of this is that the House of Commons has very strict timetabling, and there's not much time to do anything. But there is an opportunity for the opposition to try to bring some amendments, so suggested new bits or trying to take some bits out. It's also an interesting opportunity because the bill committee can get outsiders in, people who aren't MPs, to give evidence. So
oh, cool.
Interested stakeholders.
Like a trial.
A bit like a trial. People from, you know, think tanks, people who are personally affected, all that sort of stuff. Journalists, commentators, scientists, whoever it is, whatever kind of bill it is. So, for example, the House of Commons might bring us in so we can tell them how much we want our £86 billion a year.
Right, because in The History Boys, the play The History Boys opens with one of the main characters clearly having been hired by some MPs to try and help them get a bill passed.
Yeah.
Which would get rid of, basically would abolish the presumption of innocence until proven guilty.
Exactly, and this sort of stuff normally happens at the committee.
This will be in this moment. That's interesting.
Indeed.
Lord Wilmington famously? Lord Wilmington was, I think, in charge of the Act of Union Bill during the committee stage.
I think he was. So that's the kind of stuff that happens in committee. So it's not quite a real line-by-line scrutiny, but it is a bit more detail. You start to look at various sections of the bill in a bit more detail. Our bill went through committee, and the opposition brought an amendment that would try to give us an official residence as well. But annoyingly, because it's the House of Commons, the government whipped its members of the committee to vote down the amendment.
Oh, no.
So we didn't get it.
So it's only members of the committee who were voting at that point?
Indeed. It's in the committee. It's just a small little committee, and things can be brought in and voted on by the committee.
And how do they decide the makeup of the committee? Does the government get to go, why don't we just make them all conservatives?
It reflects the party balance in the House overall. Mm. But the people who get on the committee, which MPs actually get picked, is normally up to the whips. So the whips normally find ways of picking the most loyal MPs who are going to do their bidding.
Does that mean that if you're an independent MP, you never find yourself on these committees?
Basically, because you only make up a 650th of the House because there's only one of you.
Yeah.
But there aren't many independent MPs anyway. After committee stage, the bill is brought back to the House for something called report stage, which is a similar process to the committee, but it takes place in the House as a whole, so all members can take part, suggesting amendments, voting on amendments. This can be the most interesting time for the bill, because the government has less control over the House as a whole than it does in a small committee where it's chosen its own members. So more amendments do end up getting made at report.
So is this the point where some completely random MP can come in with a wrecking amendment and say, fine, but the podcasters are never allowed to leave the House?
Exactly. You can just bring in these random things to try to screw up the whole bill. It's a lot more fun. Again, it's the House of Commons, so the government has a lot of control and almost always wins the votes.
It's that game, yes, but...
Yeah.
My dream superpower would be to, I don't know, move at the speed of light, and I can amend it and say, yes, but you have to make a choo-choo train noise the whole time.
And I would say, yes, but so long as I'm making the choo-choo train noise, everybody is happy around me all the time.
And throughout all this process, the government whips are going, can you please stop mucking this up? But yeah,
I don't want to make a choo-choo train noise.
So yeah, it's going to be the most interesting time, because sometimes, again, the government does win most of its votes, but sometimes you can defeat the government. Sometimes you can force the government to compromise and do a sort of halfway amendment. Maybe if another amendment's dropped in return, you can start to get these alliances being built up and these rebellions and these groups of people fighting for new causes and new amendments.
And who can suggest amendments? Is it literally anyone, or is there a certain amount of control that, I don't know, maybe the Speaker or something exerts on what amendments are taken seriously?
So this is a very important point and nicely foreshadows my next point, because it's worth noting that not all amendments get debated. Loads of amendments get suggested. Every MP has a couple of amendments they want to put down. But almost all of them do not get debated for a moment, because they have to be selected by the Speaker for debate. So only a fraction will ever actually be discussed at all. And this is normally based on maybe the number of signatures, the number of MPs who have signed up to particular amendments, the importance of the people suggesting them. So if the Leader of the Opposition suggests an amendment, that'll probably get debated. If Mr. Nobody from the backbenches does, it probably won't. But again, this is all based on these very strict time limits. There's not time to do everything in the House of Commons, so the government has a lot of control.
And the Speaker, and that's why we so have to do an episode on the Speaker at some stage and why their role is so important and what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Selection of amendments is massive.
I mean, that's just like the tip of the iceberg in terms of what they can just control.
In our bill, the government got its MPs to vote down a further attempt to give us an official residence. But there's a strong feeling on the government backbenches for this. Are the cracks starting to show? Are alliances starting to be made?
Ooh.
Maybe. But fundamentally, our bill has not been amended either in committee or at report stage, so it goes for its final stage in the House of Commons, something called third reading. The third reading is very simple. It's very short. It is a final debate and final vote on the bill. But the debate itself is normally just the minister, the shadow minister, a few interested backbenchers doing a little speech, and then there's the vote. Our bill passes.
Yay!
Sorry, so the third stage sounds like a bit more of a formality.
It's not quite, because there is technically a vote at the end, but the debate itself is normally very perfunctory.
Oh, what, because the opportunity to say your piece has kind of just been had.
Yeah.
So if the bill's going to fall, or if it's at high risk, people already know that. There's no point grandstanding. You may as well get it over with and move on.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. But our bill passed. It's worth noting at this point that sometimes that can be it. Under the Parliament Acts 1911 and 1949, the Lords have no say at all over bills that relate to tax and public spending, nor to a bill that was rejected last year, but passed again by the House of Commons the subsequent year. This is all a bit confusing, but basically, the Lords have nothing to say about money bills, and they can't block things for more than 1 year. So if our bill had been either of those things, it just skips the Lords altogether.
Nice. It doesn't, though, does it?
But also, there's a very real possibility that it doesn't make it onto the Lords' radar just because of the number of things that are going around. And especially towards the end of a parliamentary session, there can be a bit of a sort of frantic, we need to get all this stuff tied up and finished, right? And I mean, it'll be very controversial if a bill as important as this one were to not be addressed by the Lords. I mean, that would be wrong. That'd be standing in the face of democracy. But
very
it
true.
Does happen, doesn't it?
It does happen. Again, lots of bills just run out of parliamentary time altogether. Fortunately, this one is a government bill, so the government will ensure, because it controls most parliamentary time, it'll ensure that this one does have sufficient time to be debated. But because our bill is not one of these special bills that the Lords ignore, the Lords get to see it. How would you send a bill from the House of Commons to the House of Lords? How would you let them know that it exists and they need to have a look at it?
I would get the butler to take it on a nice, you know, there's one of those serving trays, like a silver tray with a big
cloche over the top.
Over the top, yeah. And then the butler like walks down the hallway and the camera follows him, like really comedically as he takes several turns around these really, really long corridors. And then he gets to the door and he's got like white gloves and he like opens up the thing and he's like, my lords, your bill.
Well, Cass, you're not far off, because what happens is, they obviously don't use email, they probably do use email, but the way it is done is that a copy of the bill, as amended, if it has been amended, ours hasn't, is printed. It is bound up in green ribbon. And then a clerk, one of the officials, dressed in their full regalia with a little horsehair wig and a nice black gown, carries it to the House of Lords. But not only do they carry it to the House of Lords, they need to let the Lords know what to do with the bill. So the clerk writes a little note at the top of the bill. What do you think the note says?
I don't know what it says, but I know what language it's said in.
Excellent question. Yeah, which language is it?
Is it in Latin?
No.
Oh, is it in French?
It is in Norman French.
Of course it's in bloody Norman French.
The clerk writes, "Soyez au Seigneur" on the top, which means let it be sent to the Lords. And then they carry it down the corridor, all the way to the House of Lords, where one of the House of Lords clerks meet them. They hand over the bill, they do a little bow, and then they return to their houses. And that is how the bill gets communicated to the Lords.
You know this whole thing about, like, time, right? And how, like, Parliament just really doesn't have enough of it. If only there were ways that we could just make things less time-consuming.
So, to be fair, I don't think that the 30 seconds that is taken, that's involved in this is...
The 30 seconds that it takes the clerk to dress in his full regalia, print this thing out, bind it up in a fancy ribbon, write in Norman French on the top, take it all the way down to the Lords, do a little bow, hand it over to the other guy, and then that other guy does a bow too.
But while that's happening, the Commons of the Lords will be debating the hundreds of other bills. This podcast
happens
is
in
not
the, background.
The only thing that's happening.
It's the most
just
important
a little fun
thing.
Yeah. A fun ceremony.
And it is. One of the endless fun ceremonies that happen in Parliament every day.
They are capable of passing a bill in one day if they put their mind to it.
They can. These things can take months or a day, depending on how stressed they are. House of Lords. The bill has arrived in the House of Lords after its little ceremony, and basically everything that happened in the House of Commons happens again. So it's a very similar structure. But what's worth noting is that the tone of the debate and the way that it's debated is very different. The procedures, the stages are the same, but the way that they're approached is very different.
And is that because we're in the Lords full stop and it would have been different if the bill had started here? Or is it because it's already got a stamp of approval, so they're in a different mode?
Probably both, which is why you normally start all the big controversial stuff in the Commons anyway. But there is just a way that the Lords approach things anyway, just because of who they are and what the purpose of their house is. So a number of the different things to remember are that there are no time constraints in the Lords. Everything's very timetabled, very programmed in the House of Commons. A huge power that the government has is keeping the timetable short, forcing you to run out of time, meaning that lots of stuff can be dropped. That doesn't exist in the Lords. Every amendment gets debated. Every single one. They can do. And that's why committee stages and things in the House of Lords can last days and days and days. Every amendment gets debated. There's more participation. There's no government majority in the House of Lords. Mm. So everything, the government always has to find some friends to vote with them, or at least get the other sides to abstain. There's a much greater focus on amending rather than rejecting. Much more time is taken up on probing. So lots of amendments are brought, not because you want to change the bill, but more just you want to see how the government reacts to it. You see how many people will vote for it. You start to get a sense of who's thinking what about it. But there's just a lot more scrutiny because there's so much more time for this sort of stuff. And everyone participates much more than in the House of Commons.
And how do they have the time for that? Is that because they don't tend to consider as many things as the Commons, because a lot of the Commons stuff will fall, or because it, you know, it has to have gone through a certain, not that everything has to, but a lot of it will have gone through a certain filter?
That's a very good question. Firstly, there are more general debates in the House of Commons. The people, MPs, want to bring issues to be debated in a general way in the House of Commons, because the House of Commons is the centre of democracy. That happens a bit less in the Lords. They focus more on the actual bills themselves. There's also a secondary chamber called the Grand Committee Room in the Lords, which basically sits every day debating a bill. Every single day. So there's more way of getting stuff done.
So they can get through bills a bit quicker.
Exactly, even though each bill takes a bit longer. And because the Lords like to amend things, you'll be very pleased to hear that during the procedures on the bill in the House of Lords, the amendment to give us an official residence was passed.
Where is it?
It's absolutely lovely. It's going to be built in the middle of Hyde Park.
Oh.
But I wanted Strawberry Hill House.
Oh, well, what we can do, we can sell the one in Hyde Park and buy Strawberry Hill House.
Or we could model our house on Strawberry Hill House,
I'll
but
be
it's
up for that.
In Hyde Park, so we get the whole of Hyde Park too.
Excellent.
That's kind of fun.
There we go. So it's now in the bill. But what, of course, this means is that the two houses have agreed to different things.
Oh, okay.
So what happens now?
Say it.
You can say it.
parliamentary ping pong.
Ping pong. Parliamentary ping pong is what happens. It is technically called the consideration of amendments stage, but right. Everyone calls it ping pong.
Wait, everyone actually calls it ping pong?
Everyone calls it ping pong. Oh, God. So, the two houses have agreed to different things, which means that even though the bill as a whole has been passed by both houses, there is one difference, this addition of giving us an official residence. So that needs to go back to the House of Commons. And if something goes back to the House of Commons, what does that involve?
The whole thing again.
Oh, God.
Not the whole procedure again, but involves the clerk in a wig carrying it down the corridor.
No, that guy again.
Yes, the guy carries it back, a new copy of the bill.
The camera follows him again as he scurries back down the corridor.
Exactly that, only this time bound in red ribbon because it's coming from the House of Lords.
And at some point he'll cross the divide in the carpet / tiles where they change from red to green.
And, of course, it has been endorsed again with Norman French.
Does it say something like, for your consideration, yours sincerely?
This one says, à cette bi avec un amendement, les seigneurs sont assentus, which means to this bill, with one amendment, the lords have agreed. And it goes back to the House of Commons. So, ping pong can be this very, very weird stage. It's a negotiation, it's haggling, it's the two houses arguing and fighting over the little details that they disagree on.
But presumably, because they disagree, if, say, I don't know, we suddenly had to go to war in the middle of this, or something happened that just took up all the time, the bill would fail, even though both houses pretty much agree to it.
But bills can fail. If you can't reach an agreement over the amendments, then they fail. But normally the House of Lords backs down because they're the House of Lords. But it is a real haggle. Both houses have broadly agreed to the bill, but slightly different versions. So the two houses now need to negotiate to sort out the differences. There's not going to be much haggling on this bill. There's just one amendment, the one that gives us a house. But sometimes the Lords can amend a bill dozens of times. And so this period of accepting some amendments, rejecting others, suggesting compromise amendments, withdrawing amendments, can require the bill to be pinged one way and ponged the other quite a few times. It can go back and forth and back and forth, all with huge amounts of behind-the-scenes negotiations between individual members and the whips.
And presumably part of that, when you were saying that the House of Lords doesn't like to sort of oppose the Commons so much, but they do have a very particular role of being the sort of the revising experts. They're saying, if you don't put in this amendment, then it could make something really awful legal, or it would leave a huge loophole open or something like that. And the Commons will be going, oh, go away. We want the thing as written.
That does happen quite a lot. But again, it's just the Lords, they keep sending new ideas and new things to the Commons. And especially on big controversial bills, there can be dozens of these. It's quite interesting to notice that this is nothing like the American system. In America, when the two houses pass slightly different bills, there's a sort of big conference. Like there's a committee that's formed, joint of the two houses.
Wait, you mean the two houses actually talk to each other?
They talk directly to each other. They form a big committee.
They don't talk by sending a clerk in a horsehair wig from one side to the other.
Exactly. They actually talk to each other in a big sort of committee that organises and tries to sort this out.
What could be more passive-aggressive than sending a clerk in a horsehair wig with a little version of their thing but rewritten your way?
Tied in a velvet ribbon with some Norman French at the top.
Well, you tell the Commons that it's very much that. That doesn't happen here. We don't get the two houses together to thrash it out. They send each other messages, bitterly fighting. Yeah. What this does mean is that ping pong can be incredibly complicated and very hard to follow. Because for some of the other parliamentary stages, like a third reading debate, the third reading vote is just, shall we pass this bill? Yes or no? Whereas in ping pong, you can get questions like, should we disagree with the Commons in their Amendment 6G, which is itself an amendment in lieu of the original Lords Amendment 6?
Oh, God.
It's like, what?
So the Commons can shoot down individual amendments. So they can go, you know what, we didn't like Amendments 2 and 4, but we're okay with 1, 3 and 5. And they can, but as in, do they get to vote on the individual amendments one by one, or do they have to agree on a sort of proposed package of amendments?
No, you normally vote on them one by one, so you can reject 1 and 5, you can accept 3 and 4, you can reject 6, but propose your own compromise amendment in its place. It's a real haggle, and a very confusing haggle, because you have so many different amendments with different names and different letters, and it's hard to follow.
But then once they finish that stage, it then becomes a package deal for the Lords again. So the Lords are then told, well, Commons rejected 2 and 4, but they accepted 1, 3 and 5, and they proposed their own 6, and the Lords has to go, oh.
And then the Lords have to go through it again. So if amendments get accepted by the other house, then that takes it off the table. That's another thing that's been agreed. So you sort of whittle it down with the things that you disagree until hopefully you either agree or someone backs down. But ping pong can be not only very complicated with those questions, but it can also be the most complex bit. So much of the time, each ping and pong happens over one day. The Commons debates a few amendments, sends it to the Lords overnight, the Lords do it the next day. But sometimes, bills can be pinged and ponged many times in a day. Sometimes the bill is very urgent, politically or economically urgent. Sometimes there are only a few days left in the parliamentary session, so you want to get it passed immediately. Or sometimes the whips just want to exhaust their opponents into submission. And so on these instances, sittings can go into the early hours, sometimes all night, but in these very short bursts. Your House debates a few amendments and then sends it off, and then you just stop for a few hours and wait to see what comes back. So you do have examples every few years where this happens on big important bills, where you end up with, you know, MPs ordering huge amounts of pizza via Deliveroo at 3 a.m. and camp beds get set up so you can have a couple of hours sleep while the other House is looking at the bill, we're ready for it to come back to you at 4 a.m, where you've got to wake up and do your bit for half an hour.
Oh, God.
But also that's the point when the clerks going down the corridors, that time actually matters, and you're, depending on whether you want it or not, you know, getting the roller skates or
yeah.
Going, no, please, just absolutely. Give us some sleep this time.
Quickly, come on, put your wig on, do the French, you've got to do the French, don't forget that. But yes. So it can be very, very difficult. But if you remember, with our bill, although the Commons rejected the idea of us having our own residence, there was something bubbling. And then the Lords put it in anyway. So that amendment went back to the House of Commons, and there was enough of a rebellion brewing that the government decided to accept the amendment and tell its MPs to accept.
So they didn't want to lose face by losing a vote.
Exactly. So the government backed down and said, fine, we'll accept it.
Because that's the thing I find fascinating about so much of politics, which is that a lot of it's about not losing face. You know, the way that, for example, a party can kick out their own leader internally is because the party would rather that it happened as an internal process than that they publicly kicked out their leader in a vote of no confidence, because that would be embarrassing. This thing where you go, okay, you know what, you've won, but I'm not going to let you win in the arena you want. I'm going to do it in the arena I want.
There's so much of that, exactly. But what this means for our bill is that both houses are now in full agreement.
Yay!
So the bill has been passed. One final message gets sent back from the House of Commons to the House of Lords saying, à cet amendement, les communes sont assenties, to this amendment. The Commons have agreed, just to let everyone know what's going on. And that's it. The bill has now completed its stages, and both houses have fully passed everything and have agreed on a precise, identical copy each.
Yay!
But there's one person they haven't asked.
Yes. Because how many parts does Parliament have?
Oh no, the King.
The King's involved, exactly. The final stage. Royal Assent. This stage feels a little bit like the American system, because so much of the American system is not British, and explicitly not British, except for a few things where they've gone, oh, actually, that bit's nice, we'll keep that bit. There are a few bits that are copied and pasted, and this is basically the presidential veto. The Parliament, the Congress, sends a bill to the head of state for it to be signed off. But the difference is, whereas the American president vetoes stuff a lot that comes from Congress, our monarch hasn't vetoed anything since 1708.
Which is before the American system was written. So weird that they would take that bit, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right, actually. But yeah,
what was the last thing he was like, nah, to?
The last thing was
she.
It was Queen Anne.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the last thing she vetoed, the Scotland Militia Bill.
Oh, and this was the one where her mistress actually wanted her to veto it. And indeed. Yeah, we've talked about this. Yes.
Because they decided not to arm the Scots.
Yeah, they changed their minds.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, actually, let's not. But yes, so it's purely a formality nowadays. But what happens is a number of bills that have been passed are drawn up in a little list. It gets sent to the King. The King signs a warrant. Letters patent declaring the royal assent are drawn up, to which the great seal of the realm is affixed.
The King has just agreed to pay us personally
£86 billion.
It's good that he doesn't get a say, isn't it?
Exactly. He's got to do it.
That's a year, right?
Per year, yeah.
One other thing, though. Monarchs haven't said no to anything, but Queen Victoria famously used to sit on things.
Yes.
What?
Yeah, she used to just go, well, I might get round to it eventually.
Yeah, I'll give royal assent.
Oh, wait, she didn't.
I'll wait a few weeks.
She didn't literally sit on.
Well, I mean, she might have sat on a cushion or two. But
maybe.
The way you said that, I thought she'd just take the bill and sit on it.
It's rather unfortunate, actually, because she'd smudge all the ink and then no one's written there anymore.
Exactly. She'd have been like, what are you going to do? I'm sitting on it. You can't move me. I'm Queen Victoria.
That's why she was wearing all black. It was actually blue, but she just smudged so much ink on all the bills she'd been sitting on.
But also, that raises some interesting questions about when the law comes into effect.
It does, because oddly, That stage, the Great Seal of the Realm, being affixed to the letter's patent, is not the final step. The final step is that the Speaker has to announce it to the House. And the Speaker stands up at a random point during the day and says, I have to notify the House that under the Royal Assent Act 1967, His Majesty has given Royal Assent to the following Act, Podcasters Act. That's when Royal Assent actually has effect.
And that's when we get our House.
Exactly.
In Hyde Park.
In really important bills, they probably take control over that in the text of the bill and say from this point, for example, finance bills, they'll need to be very specific about when certain taxes are valid from and so on.
Yes, but that's slightly different because you have commencement dates in legislation. Sometimes the law says actually we'll bring it in a few years' time. I'm not even talking about that. This is about when royal assent itself actually happens. And it's not when the king signs it.
It's not when the king says yes.
It's not when the Great Seal of the Realm is affixed to a bit of paper.
It's when the Speaker says
it. It's when the Speaker does a random little statement that nobody notices.
Schrödinger's king again.
Yeah. It's a bit of a British way of doing it. The thing that you'd think would be the climax is not the climax. It's the penultimate bit.
That's so weird.
But it says a lot about parliamentary primacy because the bill doesn't mean anything until the Commons have heard about it.
Exactly that. That is so important. It's saying that, yes, the king's signing it off, but we have to be told. And until we're told, it doesn't matter.
That's so fun.
Mm. But then it's law?
But then, finally, it's law. Once Parliament's been notified, royal assent has been granted, the bill is a full law. It is now an act, not a bill. And we get our money and our house. So congratulations to us.
Yay! Mm.
Dispatch box.
So I thought it might be fun to read out some of the really lovely reviews that we've received on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
So first up, we have Houston Taylor. I don't know if that's a first name, last name, or last name, first name.
Or someone from Houston.
Says, hello from Houston, Texas.
Oh, there we go. Read ahead, John.
Superb opening episode so far. Aww. And the Walpole episodes really helped me understand the worldview in which George Frederick Handel made money in the London stock market while writing operas and oratorios.
Is Houston Taylor also a Rexypod person? It does sound like they're doing a podcast.
Yeah, on Handel.
It does sound a little bit like Settling the Score, but Settling the Score are not going to get to Handel for at least 5 years.
Yeah, that's true.
They just really like Handel.
Cannot wait for the next episodes, especially what Lord North was up to, besides being that guy who said, dear God, it's all over, in our history textbooks.
Mm.
And looking forward to more of Podcat's research and Dogcast's legal antics.
Aww. Podcat is very good at research.
5 stars, which is very generous of
you.
Oh, thank you very
much.
Very
good, thank you.
For the record, we reserve the right to read out all reviews, unless you ask us not to. But we might limit it only to the ones that are 5 stars.
I think that's fair enough.
1 star. I hate this podcast.
Oh, that was you.
Also, a 5-star review from _MBGT_. Good job, you lot, entitled. Excellent, informative and funny. Keep it up like the cat.
Oh, aww. Everyone just loves Podcat. Mm.
And then finally, Palmer Vaz via Apple Podcasts said, ooh, with 5 stars. Sorry, that was the title. Love that the Rexy format is evolving and we have 3 hosts. I can't wait to learn about how the prime ministers work and finally make sense of the British way of governance.
Ah.
Oh, I'm not sure you will make sense of it, but I hope this is helping. Yes.
I like that an evolution in the Rexy pod format is having more presenters. So like a 50 presenter podcast is like the highest level of podcast.
Oh no, an evolution is like creating the Lord Bath Memorial Prize.
That's an amendment. That's true. That is an amendment that we all passed.
This was an episode on how laws were made. We hope that you'll give it great consideration.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at primetime_cast or write in at writeonwriteoff@gmail.com, or you can visit our website, primetimepod.
And remember, never flinch, never weary, never despair, and subscribe to our podcast.
So there was a bit of a conversation between podcast creators about levels of knowledge and how much you knew before you started the podcast versus how much you know now. And it is hilarious how much of a difference there is. So I was like, oh, I basically couldn't have named any of the prime ministers in the 18th century. And Josh of Grand Dukes in the West said, oh, I'd read like 6 or 7 books on Burgundy before I started my show.
I haven't read 6 or 7 books even now.